We are back on the Bengals Beat podcast. Lindsey Patterson, Tyler Dragon, Charlie Goldsmith. How you guys doing?
So I'm doing good. I don't know. Some of you may not know this, but this is one of my favorite times of the year. I only get this every 4 years. It's Olympic season right around the corner. You had gymnastic Olympic trials last week. You have swimming Olympic trials this week. Track and field Olympic trials starts today. I'm covering it for USA Today. So this is a good time of year for me. And of course, you still have football season right around the corner, OTAs. And mini camp just wrapped up. Training camp is right around the corner. So it's a good time for me. But Charlie is probably doing the best out of all of us because he is in beautiful San Diego, California, my home state. So, Charlie, we got to know how you're doing because you're in San Diego right now.
I hate to be that guy who hops on a podcast and talks about how cool the city that he's in that the other people aren't in is, but it's a very cool city. What's just fascinating is how it kind of all lines up around the restaurants, right kind of downtown, similar in structure to the banks, except just a lot more. It's bigger, the restaurants are more unique, delicious. It's just a beautiful overall city, and I feel excited to be here, but quick question for Tyler. Tyler, I'm not an Olympics guy at all, not just because, I completely respect it. I just never quite got into it. So give me one name. Who's one name that now I'm going to follow, who will be my person that I'm going to be a diehard fan for in the Olympics now?
Well, it depends, which sport you want to follow. But, Simone Biles in gymnastics,
That's too
Katie.
mainstream. Too mainstream. I love Simone Biles. I'll be watching Simone Biles.
Okay, well, if you want, I'm a track and field guy. So I would follow Noah Lyles, Sha'Carri Richardson. Those are two really good sprinters. Ryan Kovacs and shot put. I got Brittany Reese. I can go on and on and on with track and field. Sydney McLaughlin. It's going to be a really good track and field Olympic trials. But I mean, if you're just a casual fan, the three sports to watch in the Olympics are track and field, swimming, and gymnastics. Those are the sports you really key in on the Olympics. Those are really good athletes, and both men and women. So the trials are they were started last week in the gymnastics case. This week, swimming trials are wrapping up, and starting today, track and field. My favorite is starting today in Eugene, Oregon. So yeah,
All right,
that's
so
a little Olympic breakdown.
the name I remember is Sydney McLaughlin. I'm now the biggest Sydney McLaughlin fan, and I'll be
Okay, no,
asking
I said
questions.
Noah Lyles, Sha'Carri Richardson. Those are
And no, I'll go with Sydney and Noah. I'm now
okay.
their biggest fan, and I will be following what they do all summer.
Okay, they will. Sydney McLaughlin could and Noah Lyles. Well, Sydney can probably beat any NFL athlete in a sprint, and Noah Lyles definitely can.
I'm here for
So.
it. I'm here for it. Tyler, you're going to be our track and field expert. I'm going to be following along. I know you said you're doing some work for USA Today, so you're going to want to check that out. Tyler will have that covered. And I'm just going to say right now, gymnastics is my sport. Obviously, we cover the NFL, work in the NFL side. I like some baseball, but gymnastics is so fun to watch in the Olympics. Simone Biles, she's not real. She isn't human because of how amazing she is. And I'll just say this, when I was in gymnastics when I was a kid, my favorite thing was eating the snacks after gymnastics. So I'm not anywhere close to that kind of talent. So I just admire from afar. But I'm really looking forward to it. I know you'll have great coverage, but we'll back it up just a little bit because the Bengals just wrapped up their one day of mini camp. And everybody wants to know at the top of the podcast, give us a Joe Burrow update, Tyler.
My weekly Joe Burrow update. He did talk to us on Monday. I was pleasantly surprised that he talked, but it seems like every time Joe Burrow is approaching a new month in his recovery process, he ends up talking to us. He said his knee was still around 85% recovered. He reached the 28-week mark of his recovery process on Wednesday. So he is now 7 months into his recovery. And the timeline, I've said it before, but I'll say it again, for his type of knee injury is 9 to 12 months. So he's, rounding the corner, nearing the finish line. of his left knee recovery process. You know, he's still remains confident and very optimistic that he'll be 100% by week one. You know, training week one, that September 12th game versus the Minnesota Vikings, it's around the 10 month mark. So that is a realistic goal for Joe Burrow and the Bengals to, you know, have a quarterback out there, because 10 months into, you know, that recovery process and after knee surgery, you're if not 100%, you're close to 100%, but he is confident that he will be, you know, 100% around that 10 month mark. And week one, luckily for the Bengals, luckily for Joe Burrow, he will be a little bit over 10 months removed from surgery. So he's still on the right track. There hasn't been any hiccups. He hasn't hit any hurdles in his recovery process. And from what we were hearing, he's a little bit ahead of schedule. And the recovery process, like I said, for his type of injury is 9 to 12 months. Once week one rolls around, he'll be at a little bit over 10 months. So it's very realistic for him to play week one versus the Minnesota Vikings at Paul Brown Stadium.
My tagline kind of with Joe Burrow throughout this month has been, what more could you have wanted? You know, I've seen development in his deep ball and his velocity. I've seen that independent of the fact that he is coming through, or he's coming off the knee surgery. I've learned a lot too. You know, I'm not quite sure how many quarterbacks Zach Taylor has coached in his career who are coming off a similar surgery, but the other lasting takeaway is how every step seemed planned. Kind of almost like a pitcher coming back from a significant injury. At every step, he added one thing, then another. And, you know, we even saw that progression throughout OTAs, just from him making more simple throws to him throwing deep bombs to him taking bootlegs out of the pocket. They had it kind of down to a science almost, where Burrow wasn't doing 11 on 11s. Burrow wasn't doing much with, say, a running back right next to him. And he still was able to develop in a number of the ways that I mentioned above. You know, he looks good. This was just an overall successful process, a successful experience for him. And I guess all signs go now for the season. And as Burrow said, all signs go for training camp.
Yeah, perfect on 7-on-7s out there, just being mobile that day one of minicamp. And I think the biggest thing with Joe Burrow and what we would see afterwards, obviously velocity, arm strength, what he's been working on this offseason, him working with his receivers afterwards. I think the Ja'Marr Chase connection, and obviously it's been a minute since they were playing together at LSU, getting those extra reps in after practice, OTAs, and then you get into minicamp. Some people, when Zach Taylor, we talked to him on Tuesday, and he wrapped up minicamp, said that's going to be it for them. They had full attendance, as everybody knows, felt like they got enough in. You know, some people criticize that move. This team coming off just 4 wins, thinking maybe they need to get 2 extra days in. For me personally, I didn't think it was that big of a deal just because they did have full attendance from day one of their OTAs. What do you guys make of that?
Well, you know, they weren't the only team to cut mini camp or OTA short around the NFL. Now, I do get it from the outside looking in. You know, the Bengals have only won 6 games in 2 years. They need all the practice they can get. And Zach Taylor did say during OTAs that the Bengals need to take advantage of this opportunity and take advantage of practice time. But, you know, during OTAs, they had pretty good attendance the entire time. Even during minicamp, the only player that, you know, while I was there minicamp that was absent was Hakeem Adeniji. And that's because he got injured, unfortunately, tore his pec. So, you know, overall, Zach Taylor canceled the last 2 days of minicamp. One, because there was good attendance by the team. It looked like all the players, you know, wanted to be there, and they were, you know, enthusiastic about going to OTAs and minicamp. And usually around this time of year, you know, I've been to several OTAs and minicamp. You kind of get a sense that there are some players and, you know, even some coaches that, you know, really don't want to be there and want to hurry up and get their vacation started over again before training camp gets underway, and just wants to hurry up and get out of there and going through the motions. But I did not get that sense from the Bengals players or coaches. And the second reason why Zach Taylor wanted to cancel the last 2 days is to encourage the players who are not vaccinated to get inoculated. And that's because if you have 85% of your team vaccinated, players can do in-person meetings and much, much more. The NFL announced its COVID-19 protocols in advance of training camp in the preseason. And let's just say life is much easier for players, coaches, and NFL staff members who are vaccinated as opposed to unvaccinated players. There are still a lot of restrictions for unvaccinated players, and those restrictions are similar to what they were last season. So it is best if you are any member of the NFL to get vaccinated, because things will kind of be back to normal if you're vaccinated. And so the Bengals, from what I'm hearing, they're close to that 85% threshold where they can have, you know, in-person meetings and so on, but they're not quite there yet. So Zach Taylor canceled the last 2 days of practice in part to give some of the unvaccinated players an opportunity to get vaccinated before training camp.
Tyler, you touched on it. Lindsay, you touched on it. A part of the reason this doesn't matter as much, the lack of, I guess, these last 2 days of minicamp, is because the Bengals had full attendance at OTAs. And remember, the biggest reason why they had that was because, you know, Jesse Bates is the players' union rep. They negotiated on how much contact there would be, how intense it would be, and created an environment that was best suited for the players to then come and all show up and be ready, you know, to have the most productive minicamp possible without risking themselves for injuries. So on one hand, you can't praise the players and the coaches for coming to that union and deciding to limit injuries and get everyone around. And then after that, criticize the Bengals for not doing more and creating even more of that risk later in camp. The Bengals got what they needed to do. They put their players at as little risk as possible. And, you know, I personally, you know, if I was making this gamble, would take the – if you're risking someone else getting hurt, I would take having no 2 days of minicamp over another injury like, say, Hakeem Adeniji's.
I want to go back a little bit to the vaccination process, because this week we found out what the future of the 2021 season could be while we go into training camp. The NFLPA released this. If you are not vaccinated, you're still going getting tested every day. You're not in the group meetings, 15 player limit in the weight room, travel restrictions. You're not in the sauna or steam room. So the things to make life a little bit easier for players, and look, it's a touchy subject. As someone who got vaccinated, I obviously know that you go into the research, you look and see what's best for you, and if you feel comfortable doing it. I totally understand people's decisions when it comes to the vaccination. But man, life could be pretty difficult going into the 2021 season when you're not around your teammates and you're still doing life virtually while they're around each other.
Yeah, 100%. If you're not vaccinated, you still have to wear masks every day at the team facility. You have to remain physically and socially distant. Gotta quarantine if you're, you know, across somebody who tests positive. You have still travel restrictions. You can only be in the weight room with a maximum of 15 people. Can't use the sauna, can't use the steam room. There are so many restrictions. You can't, you know, go out to bars, lounges, clubs. Not that players are awful. Well, never mind, I won't say that. But you can't go out really. You can't, you know, travel, spend time with your family. So it is best to get vaccinated if you're a player, because you really have no restrictions, and life is pretty much back to pre-pandemic days. You can travel when you want during the off season. You can spend time with family, friends, loved ones. You can use all the team facilities with as many people as you want. So it is best to get vaccinated. I know there are some Bengals that don't want to get vaccinated. There are some players around the NFL that don't want to get vaccinated. However, it is best based on the NFL protocols that they sent out in a memo. It is best if you're a player or a member of any NFL team to get vaccinated.
I'll just say this. It's interesting to compare the NFL with MLB, you know, with MLB being in season and kind of having teams cross these vaccination thresholds during the season. Just talking to baseball players on and off the record, it's very clear that they feel a strong competitive advantage once the team reaches that 85% threshold. And that carries a lot of weight, just hearing players be honest like that about that. And you'd think that will definitely transfer over to the NFL as well.
Around 2 to 3 teams right now at 85% to be determined on if the Bengals do reach that during training camp. There's no offseason in the NFL. We'll have plenty of interviews coming on the Bengals Beat podcast and content over on Cincinnati.com. But before we wrap up this pretty quick podcast of OTAs and minicamp, Tyler, what is your questions of the week?
So I have 3 this week since we have kind of a shorter podcast. And the first one I think you two are going to like. So Cincinnati has been kind of Cicadaville for the last month or so. So I want you two to give me 1 or 2 bad experiences that you have had with cicadas.
I will say this. I live in Covington. I live in Covington, Kentucky, and it's kind of more of a city vibe where there's a lot of buildings and not a whole lot of cicadas around. But I work, you know, a few different jobs. One of the jobs that I go to, I will not name, they're loaded everywhere. All over the ground, on the doors. I can't ignore them. I try not to look at them. I don't know why people take photos of the cicadas and post them on social media. Nobody wants to see them. They are disgusting. I want them gone. I think we're near the end, but I would just say some of the buildings I'm going into lately, I'm seeing, you know, seeing them, but I'm hearing that they're dying off right now. And I'm really happy about that.
Your turn, Charlotte.
So my story is, it was last Saturday at Great American Ballpark, and it was the first day the cicadas were just out of control. Some players even were talking about it. And think of the press box of where it is, kind of down the third base line, a little past the third base bag, around 2 sections. And I have a seat in the first row of the press box. Well, the first row, of course, is right by the big open window, and I was under attack. Probably once every 2 minutes, a cicada would be on my arm or be on my shoulder or be on my head. If it wasn't that, it was like landing on the table next to me. And like, you know, when that happens, they like get stuck on their back and they can't move. So every minute I was just shooing away cicadas, it was miserable. So I moved to the third row of the press box where I was safe. I had no more cicada experiences on Saturday. And that was a smart business decision on my end.
Wow. Charlie, you actually had a cicada land on you. I haven't had a cicada land on me. There have been some close calls. But one of my funny stories is I was going to the mall maybe 2 weeks ago, and I was driving on the freeway. I only live like 15 minutes from the mall, driving on the freeway, and it was like cicadas were committing suicide on the freeway. I had 6 splatter on my window just driving to the mall. For 15 minutes, it was just cicadas everywhere on the freeway. And I guess they really wanted to commit suicide on my front window because there were 6 splattered on my window, and it was very disgusting. And outside my back door, I don't have the courage to sweep them all up, but it's pretty much a cicada graveyard right now. There are about 100 dead cicadas. I need to go clean it up. But I'm not going to do it today or tomorrow. Maybe I'll do it by Sunday, but I have a cicada graveyard, just dead cicadas just laying on my back door. It is very disgusting to look at when I open up my door. So the second question of the week I have is for Reds fans. I understand, you know, I'm not a huge baseball fan, but I understand the Reds are doing pretty good right now. So Lindsay, Charlie, give our listeners your take on the state of the Cincinnati Reds right now.
So you're going to ask this after pretty much a heartbreaking loss in the ninth inning. I'm a pretty optimistic person right now with the Reds. And I think the storyline all season is the bullpen. I'm going to let Charlie give his expert opinion because he's obviously covering the team and is in San Diego right now for the Padres game two tonight. I'm optimistic this team can still fight for the NL Central division or at least a wild card spot. The starting pitching has been okay. It's been I'd say pretty good. It's just their bullpen struggles is hurting them. And we saw that again last night. So I'm still optimistic this team can make a run for it and make it a fun summer. And it's been a minute since that's happened because I don't count last year.
Tyler, it's interesting. I've been asked that question since before this run. So I have to formulate a new answer now about how this Red season's going. I'll say this. The Reds haven't made a run like this since 2014. Joey Votto hasn't had a run like this since 2013. The Reds haven't had contributions from two rookies in the way that they're getting from Tyler Stevenson and Jonathan Indy in the lineup in a while. The starting rotation, while rotations are crumbling across the division, has stepped up, featuring two more rookies in Tony Santin and Vladimir Gutierrez. I predicted the Reds to go 81-81 at the start of the season. I'm not too far off that yet, but they've made it clear over the last week that this is a genuinely good team that's capable of doing a lot. It just comes down to addressing their two main flaws that have been their flaws since opening day, the bullpen and shortstop/infield defense. After this winning streak, the trade deadline is now circled an even brighter highlighter, if you will, and it's even more important. The bullpen has stepped up without TJ Antone over the last 2 weeks, but, last night, of course, it was the reason they lost the game. So depth and top-end talent in the bullpen remains a concern. But, hey, it's a good team with two MVP candidates, and that's fascinating because Cincinnati hasn't been able to say that again since 2013-2014.
So the Reds have two MVP candidates right now.
Yes.
The Reds have the two best hitters in the National League, yes, performance-wise.
Wow. Okay. My third question, we started off this podcast by talking about San Diego, so it's fitting to bring up San Diego again because it's a beautiful city. Charlie, have you been to Gaslamp District yet, or have you tried San Diego's Mexican food? You have to do both while you're there.
I'm in the Gaslamp District, and it's incredible. I did go to a kind of Mexican, it was like a Mexican fusion spot last night, two nights ago, I'm sorry, after I got in. It's incredible. I went for an hour-long walk yesterday, just admiring the sights, plotting out which restaurants I was going to go to the rest of the week. There's a crepe place, which is delicious, great iced coffee. And again, I hate to be that guy who hops on a podcast and talks about how cool the city he is in is right now, but I am really enjoying San Diego.
That concludes my questions.
Well, while he's saying that, it's raining and storming in Cincinnati, so I'm really jealous. And go ahead, Charlie, you can just talk away about how great San Diego is. I'm just jealous. And follow along over on Twitter, Tyler and Charlie. No offseason in the NFL, plenty of content on Cincinnati.com. But as I mentioned before, you guys have plenty going on outside of the NFL too. What's up there?
Well, I have a complete recap of minicamp, the one-day minicamp. Like I said, Joe Burrow spoke earlier on Monday. I have a story on him and a notebook of what I saw, everything from the one-day of minicamp. And I'm really happy about this story. I interviewed a lot of Hall of Fame voters. The Bengals obviously only have Anthony Munoz as their own lone player representative in the Hall of Fame. So I really took a deep dive on why the Bengals only have one player in the Hall of Fame. So take a look at that story. I interviewed some Hall of Fame voters. They told me their opinion. So you want to check that out. There's also a rally going on in Canton on Saturday with a lot of Bengals fans to kind of, promote and endorse more players from the Bengals in the Hall of Fame. So if you're in Canton or if you're a Bengals fan, there's a rally going on Saturday. It might rain, but there is a rally close to the Pro Football Hall of Fame that's going to go on. And if you want to drive up there a few hours away from Cincinnati, you can go up there and be around your Bengals fan peers and try to, you know, rally around some of your favorite Cincinnati Bengals like Ken Riley and Ken Anderson.
I have a story up on Joe Mixon's role in reading the tea leaves based on what we've seen during minicamp and OTAs and what that all means for Mixon in 2021. On top of that, I'm following the Reds. I'm out in San Diego. And, man, it's such an interesting time for the team right now, as I mentioned earlier. So follow along.
Next up, training camp. Make sure you're following along over on Twitter, E&Q Sports, Instagram, E&Q Bengals, and all the Bengals Reds USA Olympic content. Make sure you're checking it out on Cincinnati.com. Thank you for listening to the Bengals Beat Podcast.